Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Commander's Forge. My name is Andy Bentley, and the Forge is an area for me to talk about Magic, Commander, and anything else while I try and make this mental health thing work. Now, today I do want to talk about pre-release for the Lord of the Rings Tales of Middle-earth set. Normally, I would go to one pre-release, and that would typically be the Two-Headed Giant one on Friday night at my local game store. Unfortunately, my normal partner couldn't do it because he had a tournament to go to on Saturday and didn't want to be out late. And then my backup partner had a friend up from out of state and was going to hang out with them. So I didn't end up going Friday. And instead I went and did a singles on Saturday, which is fine. We had like 20-ish people there for this. Not bad for a Saturday. My promo for my game was Sauron the Necromancer, which is the 3 black 4/4 Avatar Horror with Menace. And whenever he attacks, you can exile a creature card from your graveyard to make a tapped attacking token that's a copy of it, except it's a 3/3 black Wraith with Menace. And at the beginning of the next end step, you exile that token unless Sauron is your ring bearer. I didn't have a ton of ring synergies, but in a game of limited, being able to constantly rip a creature that they dealt with out of your graveyard, it went pretty well. And between that and the rest of my pool, I ended up building a black-red deck that was splashing white. So the thing is, I've noticed with this format, is it can go a little grindy if you don't have like a lot of the low drop creatures. And I ended up with Aomer, Marshal of Rohan, which is 2 red-red for a 4/4 human knight with haste. But whenever one or more attacking legendary creatures you control die, you can untap all creatures you control, and then after this phase there's an additional combat phase. This ability only triggers once per turn. But I could pair that with a Grima Wormtongue, which is 2 and a black for a 1/4 human advisor that says your opponents can't gain life. Tap, sacrifice another creature, target player loses one life. If the sacrificed creature was legendary, amass 2 orcs. So there were games where I attack with everything except Grima, then after combat damage but before the end of combat, tap Grima to sacrifice the lowest power legendary creature I have, and then get an additional combat, and that won me 3 of my total 8 games on Saturday. So let's talk about some of the other legendaries that I had in the deck. Starting with a couple of the cards that I had that I was splashing white for, we had Shedifax, Lord of Horses, which is 3 red-white for a 4/4 horse. It says horses you control have haste, so it does include itself. And whenever Shedifax, Lord of Horses attacks, you can put a creature card with lesser power from your hand onto the battlefield tapped and attacking. Ironically, the deck had a lot of 4-power legendary creatures in it, but there were a few that we could get with this. One of the ones we could is the other white splash we have, which is Eowyn, Lady of Rohan. 2 and a white for a 2/4 human noble. At the beginning of combat on your turn, target creature gains your choice of First Strike or Vigilance until end of turn. If the creature is equipped, it gets First Strike and Vigilance until end of turn, and equip abilities you activate cost 1 less to activate. My deck had 0 equipment in it, but just being able to give something the ability to attack into something that had, you know, the same power and toughness as it, or keep up a blocker for the next turn, fit rather well with what this deck was trying to do. Now, part of the reason we went into black-red was because we had Ugluk. Of the White Hand. 2 a black and a red for a 3/3 orc soldier. Whenever another creature you control dies, put a +1/+1 counter on him. If that creature was a goblin or orc, put 2 counters on him instead. I'm not going to get into the full deck, but I did have a non-zero amount of amass in the deck, and by amass I mean amass orcs, because it's particular in this set. I also had Mahawr, Uruk-hai Captain. It's a black and a red for a 2/2 orc soldier with menace. And whenever one or more plus one counters be put on an army, goblin, or orc you control, that many plus one counters are put on it instead. So again, this would feed in with Ugluk or any other orc armies that I had that I was making. And then to kind of round out the legendaries that I had in the deck that did stuff, we had Gimli, Counter of Kills. 3 and a red for a 4/3 with trample, and whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, Gimli deals 1 damage to that creature's controller. I actually had a game where I had a fun interaction with him and Fearfire Foes, which is X and a red for a sorcery. Damage can't be prevented this turn. It deals X damage to target creature and 1 damage to each other creature with the same controller. So I was able to cast this for 4, so X was 3, to kill a 3/3. And then I believe at that point he had 3 tokens that were all 1/1. So I was able to wipe his board, dome him for 4, and then attack for 9 that turn, I believe. So yeah, I got to do some dumb stuff with this deck. Other notable cards. There's only really 2 more that I want to talk about. The first one is Orcish Bowmasters. 1 and a black for a 1/1 orc archer. It has flash. When it enters the battlefield, and whenever an opponent draws a card except for the first one they draw in each of their end steps, the Bowmasters deal 1 damage to any target and then amasses orc 1. So this is going to be much better in constructed than in what I had it for, but it did make me like 3 total orc amassings. So yeah, the other big way we had to amass orcs was Fall of Care-Andros, 2 and a red for an enchantment. Whenever a creature an opponent controls is dealt excess non-combat damage, amass orcs X, where X is that excess damage. It then had for 7 and a red, Fall of Care-Andros deals 7 damage to target creature. In 3 of my games, I was able to get it out, and in 2 of those games, I was able to activate it multiple times. So it just got to a point where if they couldn't deal with this, they couldn't keep anything on the board, and I just was able to continuously attack it. And so it ended games. All in all, I did have a lot of fun. I don't know if I'll be buying a lot of the sealed product for this. I might just pick out the singles I want because I don't really think there's any interest in my playgroup of getting together and drafting this set. But I will put it out there. That said, that's where I'm gonna stop this part, and I will be right back talking about something else. I'll see you in a minute. Hey, I just want to take a minute to tell you about my Patreon. I know times are hard for everybody, and I know it isn't easy to shuffle around bills and stuff, believe me, I know that. But if you would like to help support the podcast and me, you can find the links to my Patreon in my link tree, which is always put into the description of either the video or the audio, wherever you're listening to it. It would really mean the world to me. Honestly, I'm just struggling to make ends meet most weeks. But that's it. That's all. If you want to help, the links will be where you can find them. And we're back. Now, today I want to talk about changing a deck. And it's a little on topic because it was a Rakdos deck that I actually shifted into a Mardu deck, much like my pre-release deck. So originally it was a Ganax with a criminal background. It was Black Red Dragons. It used to be Kolaghan, the Storm's Fury. Before that, it was 4-color with Saskia. Before that, it was 5 colors with the Ur-Dragon. And then before that, it was actually Gruul colors with a Tarka World Render. So this deck has changed periodically through my time playing it, and I decided to add white to it because I noticed some dragons have attack triggers. And I happen to have an extra Ishin to Heavens is One laying around. Now, does this break one cardinal rule of typically what I do with a deck based around a creature type? Yes. Do I care? Not really. So, Ishin is a red, a white, and a black for a 3/4 human samurai. If a creature attacking causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. Now, I have an Ishin deck that is the traditional Ishin deck. It's just all the good attack triggers go to town. But I got to add just a lot of fun stuff to this dragon deck. The first thing I want to talk about is Velomachus Lorehold. It's 5 red and a white for a 5/5 Elder Dragon. It has Flying, Vigilance, and Haste. And whenever it attacks, you look at the top 7 cards of your library. You may cast an instant or sorcery spell with mana value less than or equal to its power from among them without paying its mana cost. Put the rest of the bottom in a random order. This deck does have a good core set of removal spells. If you have Ishin out and you attack with Velomachus, since it's an attack trigger, this happens before blocks can be declared. If we can dig out 2 removal spells, there's a good chance a lot of our stuff is going to get through. Tyrant's Familiar. 5 red red for a 5/5 dragon with flying and haste. It has Lieutenant, so as long as you control your commander, Tyrant's Familiar gets +2/+2. And has, whenever Tyrant's Familiar attacks, it deals 7 damage to target creatures defending player controls. So again, you have Ishin, you attack with this, you get to hit 2 different things for 7 damage, and they still have a 7/7 coming in at them. A regular classic in Ishin decks is going to be Sword of the Animist, 2 mana, equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+1. Whenever the equipped creature attacks, you may search your library for a basic land card, put it into the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle. It equips for 2. Now, the card that honestly made me think about this whole plan was actually the original black-red commander of the deck, which is Kolaghan the Storm's Fury. It's 3 and a black and a red for a 4/5 dragon with flying. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, creatures you control get +1/+0 till end of turn. And then it has dash for 3, a black and a red. So the way this works with Ishin's ability is that for every attacking dragon you have, your dragons actually get +2/+0. So this increases exponentially because of Ishin's power. Next up we have the Kolaghan Warmonger. It's 2 and a red for a 3/2 Ogre Warrior with haste. But whenever the Warmonger attacks, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may reveal a dragon card from among them, put them into your hand, put the rest on the bottom in a random order. The number of times I've been playing a dragon deck, and the one thing that's missing is dragons. So this helps solve that problem. So let's talk about the one other non-dragon in here that has a attack trigger I want to talk about, and that's Minion of the Mighty. It's a single red. It's a 0/1 kobold. It has Menace. It has the ability Pack Tactics. Whenever Minion of the Mighty attacks, if you attacked with creatures with total power 6 or greater this combat, you can put a dragon creature token or dragon creature card from your hand onto the battlefield tapped and attacking. So, again, this one's also contingent on you having more dragons in hand, but it's very easy to attack with that much power when you have giant dragons. Let's round this out with 2 more cards. First up, we have Dragaseth, Maw of Flames, 4 red, red, red for a 7/7 dragon with flying. Whenever Dragaseth, Maw of Flames attacks, it deals 4 damage to any target. 3 damage to each of up to 2 other targets. So this can nuke boards, or this can nuke players. So Ishin's out. You have 3 opponents. You attack. It deals 4 damage to the opponent you're attacking, and then 3 damage to the other 2. And then it triggers again and does 4 damage to somebody and 3 damage to the other 2. Or you can just clear out blockers if they have a bunch of flyers. And finally, we have Utvara Hellkite. 6 red red for a 6/6 dragon with flying, and whenever a dragon you control attacks, create a 6/6 red dragon creature token with flying. Yeah, dragons. So, I did kind of want to keep this one relatively short, because I've got stuff I gotta do. And yeah, I think that's gonna be it. I will see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. All of my links can be found in my link tree in the description below. I would like to thank Ian Foss and Cody Mulpey of the band The Crypt for allowing me to use music for my opening and ending, along with Nate and Erica Jacobs for making my original logo. And I would also like to thank Christina McNichol for creating my new logo. And I'll see you next time.